Purport.
It is to be understood that Parvati is the daughter of the king of the very, very old mountainous country known as the Manipur state. 5,000 years ago, when the Pandavas ruled, Manipur existed, as did its king. Therefore, the kingdom of Manipur is very old, aristocratic Vaishnava kingdom. If this kingdom is organized as a Vaishnava state, this revitalization will be a great success, because for 5,000 years, this state has maintained its identity. If the Vaishnava spirit is revived there, it will be a wonderful place, renowned throughout the entire world. Manipuri Vaishnavas are very famous in the Vaishnava society. In Vrindavan and Navadvip, there are many temples constructed by the king of Manipur. Some of our devotees belong to the Manipur state. The Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, can be well spread in the state of Manipur by the cooperative efforts of the Krishna conscious devotees. Om Ganatamarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vaitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave. Anyone raise your hand? Any ladies or gentlemen from Manipur? No? Of course, the obvious Manipuri Vaishnava is Bhakti Srupa Damodar Goswami Maharaj, who is not just any Manipuri Vaishnava, but he's the Acharya and Guru that Lord Chaitanya has sent to ISKCON to liberate the whole country of Manipur, and he's doing quite a good job of it. It's a very unusual purport. If you examine the 18,000 verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll not find another purport like this, where Prabhupada is glorifying a region of the world, a country, Desh, and not only glorifying the region, but glorifying the people of that region. But at the same time, he's reminding the people of that region of Manipur of their great history, Vaishnava history, but also giving them a warning that they should revitalize their spiritual culture. Of course, Manipur, for thousands of years, they've actually been Shaktis, they've been worshippers of Goddess Durga. But specifically, Lord Chaitanya wanted his mercy to go to every town and village. He wanted every town and village in the world to vibrate with the holy name of the Lord. And he wanted everyone's heart, he wanted the heart of every person in the world to sing the sweet song of Prema Bhakti. So therefore, he empowered his representatives, beginning 500 years ago and throughout all of this 10,000 years of Kali Yuga. Krishna Shakti Vinayi Kutara Pravartana, Kali Yuga Yuga Dharma Namara Machara. In the age of Kali, the Dharma is non-sankirtan. But one needs Shakti to do that. So Lord Chaitanya empowers sincere devotees to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So 500 years ago, through the heart of Jiva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya spoke. Because Lord Chaitanya is externally, he's appearing as the Supreme Lord. But he internally appears as Chaitya Guru. There's Chaitya Guru and there's Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya means living force. Lord Chaitanya, the name Lord Chaitanya means that person who brings Chaitanya to life. Chaitanya means consciousness, our awareness, our identity. So Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, that personality, that wonderful incarnation of the Lord who is waking people up. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gaura Chandra Bole. By chanting the sweet names of Gauranga, the soul wakes up, Jeev Jago. So that is Chaitanya. By the mercy and kripa of Lord Chaitanya, Gauranga Kripa, and the Gauranga Vaishnava Kripa, the Atmas are waking up all over the world and chanting Gauranga, 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 Gauranga Bole. So in the heart, internally Lord Chaitanya speaks and guides the devotees. So in the heart of Jiva Goswami, who is acting for the benefit of all jivas, Lord Chaitanya spoke as the Chaitya Guru. And what did Lord Chaitanya say as the Chaitya Guru? Chaitya Guru means the Antaryami, the Guru that is inside, the spiritual teacher within the heart, Chaitya Guru. And when Chaitya Guru comes out in the age of Kali, he's known as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he comes down another age, the Chaitanya Guru is in the heart of Dhruva Maharaj, in another age, in Satyuga. But when he came out of Dhruva Maharaj's heart, he came out as Lord Narayan. Antaryami, Chaturbhuj Narayan inside, Paramatma, Chaitanya Guru, guiding, inspiring, creating determination and power within the heart of Dhruva. And then he came outside and showed himself as Chaturbhuj Narayan. But in Kali Yuga, the Chaitanya Guru comes outside of the heart and appears as Lord Chaitanya. Kali Yuga, Yuga Dharma, Namara Prachara, Pativagi, Pitavarna, Chaitanya, Avatara. So from within the heart of Jiva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya spoke as Chaitanya Guru. And Jiva Goswami spoke to three persons, three Gauranga Bhaktas, Narottam Das Mahashaya, Srinivas Acharya Prabhu, he's also called Acharya Prabhu, and Shamananda, Shamananda Prabhu. It's Prabhu, Acharya, and Mahashaya, Thakura Mahashaya. So Jiva Goswami told Narottam, Narottam, you go to East India, East Bengal, and go to the northern regions and spread Krishna consciousness. So Narottam Das Thakur went to this mountainous region, as Prabhupada mentions, the mountainous region known as Manipur. Manipur. What does Manipur mean? It means the place of money. Money means jewels, no? Money, Manipur. Because Manipur is a mountainous region. And in the mountains, there are so many rivers, and there are so many caves, and there are so many jewels that are stored there. Mother Bhumi stores many of her jewels in mountainous regions. Hira and other jewels. Rubies, diamonds, these type of things. Very valuable, very costly, valuable things. So Narottam Das Thakur went to that place, and he preached to the king of Manipur 500 years ago. And he said, why are you worshipping Shakti, Durga? You should worship Krishna. And so by Narottam, of course, he was the embodiment. He was the Prema Sarup, Gauranga Prema Sarup. He was the very form or embodiment of Lord Gauranga's Prema. So Narottam, he is the best of men. So he gave the real jewel. He actually brought the jewels to Manipur. The jewels are not diamonds and rubies and emeralds, but the real jewel is Prema. So by the preaching of Narottam Das Thakur, the Manipur king became a Gaudiya Vaishnava. And when he became a Gaudiya Vaishnava, he established Gaudiya Vaishnavism 500 years ago all over the Manipur state. And the main practice of Vaishnavism was Nam Sankirtan. And they took up the Nam Sankirtan with great enthusiasm. Today you see the Ranga Niketan, the Manipur, what is it? Ranga Niketan. This drama troupe from Manipur, they were in Delhi at the temple opening, and they're very enthusiastic for Nam Sankirtan. When they play the mridanga, they don't just play the mridanga, but they fly through the air playing the mridanga. They fly, they jump in the air, and they go upside down playing mridanga. So they're very enthusiastic for Nam Sankirtan, devotees of Manipur. So the seminal succession from the king of Manipur, his son and his son and his son, they've all been Gaudiya Vaishnavas for the last 500 years. And Prabhupada reminds us in the purport that these Manipur Vaishnavas, they're very much attached to Vrindavan and Mayapur, Navadvipa. And they learn about all this from Narottam Das Thakur, who resided in both places. And so as a result, they understood the significance and the importance of Vrindavan and Mayapur. So they used their wealth, they came to Vrindavan, Mayapur, Navadvipa, established many, many temples. When you go through on Govardhan Parikrama, so when you go through Govardhan town, you'll see there's some large red sandstone pieces, like blocks, that form the roadway. Those blocks are a donation of the Manipur king. And some devotees, I know, they go to Radhakund, and they do Dandabad Parikrama of Radhakund. And there's large, the whole Parikrama Marg of Radhakund is made of these same large red sandstones. And those were also donated by the Manipur king, Churachan, who established one temple at Radhakund named the Manipur Gopal Temple. So at Radhakund itself, there's over 35 temples. Just in the small place of Radhakund, there's 35 temples that were built by Manipur kings and princes. So they're very much prevalent. The Manipur Vaishnavas, we've had the opportunity to live in temples where the Manipur Vaishnavas reside. for a month or two at a time. So we got to observe their behavior and be blessed by them and see their devotion. They're a very, very quiet and secretive group. The Manipura temples in Vrindavan, they're not open to the public, hardly at all. The doors are always closed. But when you go inside, if you go inside, because of your curiosity, you'll find a very serious group of devotees, very serious about studying and serious about chanting japa and non-sankirtan. And usually these temples in Vrindavan, one day a year, they'll open their doors on Janmashtami. You can walk for years, walk up and down certain lanes in Vrindavan, you see all these closed doors, and all of a sudden on Janmashtami, the doors are open, there's garlands over the entrance, and there's music playing, and you see inside some beautiful deities of Radha Madhav or Mahaprabhu. So they show one day a year, yes, come in. Whereas other temples in Vrindavan, you know, they're very anxious. Oh yes, Prabhu, Hari Bol, Prabhu, please come in my temple, give your pites over here. But you don't find any Manipura temples that are paisa mandirs. They have their own money, their own fixed accounts and land. The deities have sufficient land. No one's collecting anything. No one's asking for any donations. They're atmaram. They're self-satisfied. Because they're established by saintly kings and they're long, long time established. Of course, we're new. Maybe in 300 years from now, when the descendants of, you know, the Sura dynasty or the, you know, whatever dynasties we have in the Bombay temple, the various descendants, they will be saintly kings, and they will like give millions of dollars to establish trust funds for all these temples. But this is the beauty of the Manipura Vaishnavas. All their temples, no temple cares. So you give a donation, you don't give, they don't care. You go in any temple, you take darshan, chant bhajan, kirtan, no one comes up to you, oh Prabhu, please. No, they're doing nicely. So this is, Prabhupada makes a significant point in the purport. He says that we have to revitalize. He says if we revitalize the Vaishnav spirit, this kingdom is organized as the Vaishnav state. This one, point out. Yes, if Vaishnav spirit is revived there, it will be a wonderful place. So we're in Bombay, we're not in Manipur. It's not a mountainous place, it's a seaside, a flat area, sandy plain on the banks of the Arabian Ocean or something. What ocean? Asian? Arabian Ocean. That's a very flat, sandy area, not a mountainous area. And there's no jewels here. There's no jewels here. There's a lot of money here, but there's no jewels. And certainly the jewels that Narottam distributed, the jewels that Narottam Das Thakur distributed in Manipur are also here, but in a small quantity. The jewels of Prema, Krishna Prema. But, like Manipur state, if we can create a Vaishnava spirit, Prabhupada is making this point in the purport. This is a significant point of philosophy that requires some understanding. He says that if Vaishnava spirit is revived there, it will become a wonderful place. So, what is Vaishnava spirit? Because if you can revive, if you can bring about and create, if we can bring about or create Vaishnava spirit, then we will have a wonderful place. Prabhupada often coined the phrase, he said the materialistic people, they want the kingdom of God without God. So as soon as you take away God, you can't have the kingdom of God. You have a hellish situation. Because without a pure center, you cannot have a pure, anything pure radiating from that. If the center is impure, everything radiating from the center or expanding from the center will be also impure. So the center of materialistic society, or the center of a place like Bombay, is sense gratification, which is illusion. So everything expanding from that is illusion. And with illusion comes difficulty, suffering, anxiety, problems, because the center is corrupted, is wrong. So it's not a wonderful place. When the center of a society is sense gratification and the bodily conception of life, you cannot have a wonderful place. Rather than having the kingdom heaven on earth, or the kingdom of God, they have hell on earth. This is hell. Abortion, terrorism, alienation, intoxication, so much disease, fear, insecurity, unhappiness, frustration. This is the diagnosis of modern society. It is not a wonderful place. Shanti, shanti, shanti. It's not a peaceful place. It is not a happy place. It is not a carefree, prosperous, secure place. Because there is no proper center. So Vaishnava spirit is required. If we can bring about Vaishnava spirit, then we'll have a wonderful place. So what is Vaishnava spirit? Years ago in New Vrindavan, in Prabhupada's community of Vaishnavas in America, New Vrindavan, they published one newspaper. The newspaper is called Brijbasi Spirit. Maybe you saw one copy or two, maybe 20 years ago. Brijbasi Spirit. The spirit of Brijbasis. That's Vaishnava spirit. Vaishnava spirit. Vaishnava means devotee of Vishnu. But there are many forms of Vishnu. And a specific form of Vishnu, which is our chosen Ishtadev, is not Lakshmi Narayan, nor Vishnu, Lakshmi and Vishnu. But our chosen Ishtadev is Radha and Krishna, Radha Rasa Bihari. They are our Ishtadev, Yuga Kishore. And so Vaishnava spirit means Brijbasi spirit, the spirit of the worshippers of Radha and Krishna. What is the spirit of those persons who worship Radha and Krishna? The pure devotees of Radha and Krishna are known as Brijbasis, Brijbas. They reside in Vrindavan. But what is Vrindavan? Is Vrindavan a geographical place? Is Vrindavan part of this material world? One of the Dhamma Parads is to think like that. Just as we have Nama Parad, we also have Dhamma Parad. As you cannot approach the name and realize the pure mercy of the name if you commit the Nama Parad, you cannot approach the holy Dham if you commit Dhamma Parad. You will not appreciate the pure flow of mercy and nectar that's flowing in the holy Dham if you're a Dham Aparadi. So it's an offense to the holy Dham to think that Vrindavan is part of UP or Mayapur is part of Bengal. So what does this mean, Vrindavan, to live in Vrindavan? So Vrindavan is not a country. Vrindavan is not a desh, it's not a deshi, a place of this world. Vrindavan is a spiritual world. And the spiritual world is created first. The first entrance into the spiritual world is when your consciousness enters the spiritual world. Your mind must become Vrindavan. When your mind becomes Vrindavan, then your reality, your perception, and you live, your place of residence, is Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya was taken to Shantipur, which is a small village in Navadvip, the home of Advaita Acharya. And he was tricked by his followers to be taken there, and he said, I wanted to go to Vrindavan. I wanted to go leave this Navadvip and travel for some time and come to Vrindavan and see Govardhan and Radhakund and Chamakund and all these places, at least discover them. And you've taken me to Shantipur. And Advaita Acharya said, Mora mana hale mana Vrindavan me. He said, Lord Chaitanya, wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. Wherever you are, whatever place you are, that is Vrindavan, because your mind is Vrindavan. Your mind, mana, mora Vrindavan me hale mana. Your mind has entered Vrindavan, so wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. So this is Brijbasi spirit. If we have this Brijbasi spirit, or a Vaishnava spirit, which means Brijbasi spirit, that means we'll be in Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is such a wonderful place. Prabhupada writes in his Krishna book, we put this quote on the back of one of our books, Vrindavan is such a nice place. Vrindavan is such a wonderful place. There's so many birds there singing sweetly, and there's so many waterfalls, and the wind is carrying small droplets of water through the air and creating a refreshing atmosphere and cooling everyone from the summer heat. And the Yamuna is flowing very sweetly and making melodious sounds as she passes over the rocks. And the lotus flowers are blooming and very attractively, and so many swarms of bees there are singing and drinking the nectar. Vrindavan is such a nice place, such a wonderful place. So Prabhupada describes Vrindavan in the Krishna book, as does Brahma in Brahma Samhita. So this Vaishnava spirit creates a wonderful place. So what is that? What is that spirit of the Brijvasis, of the pure Vaishnavas of Vrindavan? It is a selfless spirit, the spirit of selfless devotion. Nothing for me. I don't want anything for myself. I want to offer everything to Krishna and Radharani. Everything for their service, everything for their pleasure. And what is another characteristic of this Brijvasi spirit, the Vaishnava spirit? Another characteristic is mutual respect. Mutual respect. Every devotee in Vrindavan respects the other devotees. The coward boys appreciate the coward girls. And the coward girls appreciate the coward boys. And they have mutual respect. And the older gopis, they respect the younger gopis. There is mutual respect and appreciation there in Vrindavan. And what is the primary quality in Vrindavan? Is the utmost humility. The utmost humility. That is the meaning of seva. Seva means humility. There's no question of actual Krishna seva without humility. Humility is the purchasing power. With the purchasing power of dainya, or humility, one can obtain the service of Radha and Krishna. That is why Lord Chaitanya tells us that this is the power. This is how you buy the ticket to enter Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada mentions that you cannot enter Vrindavan by a plane ticket or a train ticket. But by this ticket, this ticket of humility, you can enter Vrindavan. Trinadati. Trina. Trina means a blade of grass. Trinadati, Sunichena. And understanding this principle 5,000 years ago, Uddhava Mahashaya, he gave an indication of Lord Chaitanya's future writing. Because when he came to Vrindavan 5,000 years ago under the order of Lord Krishna to witness the extraordinary spirit of the Brijvasis, to witness and see the Vaishnava spirit of the Brijvasis living with Krishna and serving Krishna 5,000 years ago, his response was, Uddhava had this response, I am Krishna's confidant, I am his sukha, I am his friend, I am his minister. I travel with him everywhere. He takes my advice. We eat together. We joke together. I'm Uddhava. But now I see the intensity of devotion and humility and selflessness of these Brijvasi devotees, of Radharani, the gopis, Subal, Sridhar, Madhumangal, all the gopis, Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda. Such extraordinary surrender and devotion and absorption and humility that I pray that my next life I can take birth. I can be born in this land of Vrindavan as a trina, as a blade of grass. And maybe the gopis, because they're the topmost of the devotees, maybe when they wander on the hither and thither path, they may step on me by chance, just by chance, and bless me with the padarenu, with the dust of their lotus feet. And then I can understand something about devotion. So here, Uddhava is giving us an indication of the future verse that Lord Chaitanya would write, Trinadapi Sunichena. 5,000 years ago, Uddhava realized that the only way to get this Brijvasi spirit, the only way to enter Vrindavan is as a blade of grass. Become so humble and so take such a low and fallen position. Then maybe I can enter. And if we can create this humility and develop this Brijvasi spirit, then wherever we are, it will be Vrindavan. And as Prabhupada says, if we have this Vaishnava spirit, we can create a wonderful place. He's using the example in the purport that in the Manipuri state, if we can revitalize the Vaishnava culture in the state of Manipur, and we can increase this Vaishnava spirit, then we can create a wonderful place. So as we mentioned, there's no more wonderful place than Vrindavan. Everyone is always thinking about Vrindavan, or reading about Vrindavan, or desiring to go to Vrindavan. That is our sadhya. That is the goal of our existence, the goal of our practice. If you don't know the goal, you'll never get there. So sadhana, when you say sadhana, you must also talk about sadhya, the prayojana, the goal of our sadhana. These things are always in our hand. One hand is our practice, our sadhana, and our other hand is our goal. Where are we going? Just like a man is driving in his car. He's going from Bombay to Calcutta. He decides to drive on all the national highways and go on a tour. So one hand is the steering wheel, and the other hand is a road map. You know road map? All the national highways and the streets. So he's driving, looking at the map, driving. So one hand he is driving his car and making progress, and the other hand he's keeping us in sight. Oh, where am I going? Oh, now I'm going, first I go from Bombay, then I'll go to Nagpur, then Nagpur. So one hand is his practice, his means, and the other hand is his end, his goal. So this is sadhana and sadhya. So we're practicing, we're, with our hands and feet and mouth and words and mind, we're practicing sadhana, serving the Lord, serving Guru. But at the same time, we must also be holding on to our sadhya, our goal. What is our goal? So the goal of this creating this Vaishnava spirit is to create a wonderful place, to create Vrindavan. So this whole Bombay, we can turn it into Vrindavan. Sometimes people buy a piece of land, and they make a house, and they say, Vrindavan, New Vrindavan or something. We were yesterday in Gujarat, or 2 days ago in Gujarat, near Ahmedabad, and we're going down the street and we saw some restaurant. There's some restaurant under some trees, some hotel, and had a sign, Vrindavan. So he's thinking, yes, he wants to create Vrindavan with his hotel. Hotel means restaurant. The trees are there, Vrindavan. So this Vrindavan is created first within the mind when we develop this Vrijvasi spirit. We got a very sad reminder the other day about the opposite of that. Our goal, our sadhya, is to create Vrijvasi spirit, to create this spirit that we discussed, the Vrijvasi spirit, Vaishnava spirit, and to create our minds in such a way that our mind enters Vrindavan, this mood of selflessness, this mood of humility. Recently we received one letter that was addressed to devotees. It was a general letter, dear devotees. And this letter was written by a very senior devotee, disciple of Srila Prabhupada. But somehow or other, this devotee has had difficulty, and he's temporarily stopped his practice of devotion because of some fall down. But this is a very significant piece of writing, this letter that he wrote, because there is jnana and there's vijnana. We read the Shastra, we get some knowledge, but until we realize it and incorporate it and put it into our life and practice, it is called theoretical knowledge. Theoretical or practical knowledge. Theoretical knowledge. And practical knowledge is when you realize it and put it into practice. So we have a lot of theoretical knowledge. Aham Brahmasmi. We heard the theory. I am not the body. I am pure consciousness. Maya Namsha Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. I am eternal, Sanatana. And I am Amsha. I am part of the Supreme Consciousness, part of the Supreme Lord. But have we realized it? Are we acting on the Brahman platform? Just like we say Brahmachari. Brahmachari. So many Brahmacharis are here. Or we're following Brahmacharya. Brahmachari means to move. To move. Chari, chari, chara, chara, chara. To move on the platform of Brahman. Are we moving on the platform of Brahman? Sannyasis have taken a vow of Brahmacharya. Brahmacharis have taken a vow of Brahmacharya. But we can ask the question, are we Brahmacharis? Are we moving on the platform of Brahman? Aham Brahmasmi? Only existing on the platform of consciousness and activities of consciousness and thinking of consciousness and behavior of pure consciousness? Not ourselves, at least. Mostly we're in the mundane consciousness, material consciousness. Not even consciousness. Consciousness means Brahman. We're in the body. We're existing in the body. Gross reality. Gross existence. At any rate, we're trying. We're all trying. So, this devotee, he was practicing sadhana bhakti for many, many years, and he had a fall down. But then he realized something about his fall down, and he wrote a letter. And it's incredible shastra, because it sounds like the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There are different categories of Vaishnava bhajan. And one of them, of course, is Sharanagati, where we surrender. Another one is Siddhi Lalasa, where we express our desires for our sadhya. We express our desires for perfection. Another one is called Vilap, lamenting, Vilap. He's lamenting our fallen condition, and Bodhayanika is feeling humble. So one of the categories of songs that our Padakartas write, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das, and other devotees, is this category of admitting my fallen position. I am so fallen, I've committed so many sins, please help me. So I want to read some excerpts from this letter. Then I want to discuss some of these principles which he mentions, which are obstacles to Vaishnava spirit, which are obstacles to the spirit, Vrijbhasi spirit, which we're discussing. It was a very, very sad news that we received. But sad news and the experience of others can be a great teacher. It's said that a fool learns by experience. It's called hardcore teaching. But an intelligent person learns by hearing. So when we hear this letter, it's very sad. But at the same time, we want to learn. Because we have an expression, history repeats itself. So people are always falling down the world. And every moment someone's entering this world. And every moment someone is realizing Krishna. At every moment someone is forgetting Krishna. Isn't it? At every moment someone is falling away from Krishna consciousness. At every moment someone is coming to Krishna consciousness, joining. So some coming, some going. Prabhupada used to say, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised by who leaves, but be surprised how many stay. I remember when we went to university, in the first year of university, the professor of anatomy or something, but I took all these medicine courses. Beginning anatomy, he said, now, look around, look to your right, look to your left, look in front, see your fellow students. Now, you see four people, one in front, one behind, one on right and left. Now, in 2 years from now, three of those people will be gone. Three of those students will have quit school and left. Only 25% will be in the second year class. And then he said, and then to graduate, there's four around you and one, that's five. And with the graduating, there'll only be one out of five. So in the same way, it's very rare, Sadurlabha, Mahatmana, to become a pure devotee of the Lord is very rare. So let us listen to this letter. This is a realized letter written by someone who has just fallen down from the principles of Krishna consciousness, regrettably. We'll read a part of this. Please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Please accept my humblest apologies. Apology means please forgive me. Somehow or other, I allowed arrogance, feelings of superiority, and a tendency to fall fine, to slowly grow up in a devotional garden. You know, Bhakti Lata Beach. I allow these things to grow up in the devotional garden, which I was hopefully trying to create in my heart. The worst of these things, fault finding, finally raised its head. He's comparing Vaishnava Apurad or fault finding to like a cobra, sarp. It raised its head and bit him. He said, finally, one of these things, fault finding, raised its head and bit me. Maya laid a snare. Snare means a trap. Maya made a trap for me, into which I tumbled and fell, seemingly against my will, even though I saw the consequence. The result was a dreadful and terrible spiritual fall down for me. And along with that fall down, I committed the offense of disobeying the instructions of the spiritual master, sinning on the strength of the holy name, and offending a Vaishnava. As a result, my spiritual life is now completely obstructed, and there's no hope for my spiritual salvation at this time. It's a very heart-rending letter. And this sounds like a Bhaktivinoda Thakur song. But this is reality. This happened to one godbrother. So let's analyze this. Let's be thoughtful. Let's be munis. Brahman and munis. Be thoughtful and analyze this. A person was a big leader in Krishna consciousness for so many years, but he allowed these materialistic things to grow up within him. Arrogance, pride, feeling superiority over others, and the worst of them all, fault-finding. Finding fault with the devotees. And then it ruined him. He fell down. Even against his will, it just caught him. Because Krishna will tolerate for some time. The Supreme Lord will tolerate our arrogance and our pride. Of course, arrogance and pride are demoniac qualities. Dumba, conceit, pride. These are qualities of demons. Rajagun and Tamagun. So Krishna will tolerate, because it may be a proper karma to be arrogant and proud. But by performing bhakti and proper bhakti, then these things will go away. The proper karma will be destroyed by proper performance of bhakti. So Krishna's watching. Are you becoming humble? Are you becoming Trinada Peace and Nichayana? And he's giving many long time for you to practice. But if he sees that you persistently keep your arrogance and hold on to your prabhu karma and keep expressing your pride, and then you add that to feeling a sense of superiority. Actually, you know, I'm so intelligent, I'm so learned, I'm a very good manager, I'm a very good collector, I collect so much money, I'm such an expert pujari, I'm a big sannyasi, I'm a big writer, I'm a big preacher, I'm very big. Because we see that there's three tendencies in material consciousness. And now let's see whether we have material consciousness. Material consciousness means these are the three tendencies of material consciousness. Those that are above you, those that are superior to you, you're envious of them. You want what they have. You're envious of them. You want to pull them down. And those that are on the same level, equal with you, that are on the same level of advancement or position or power, you find fault with them, and you try to diminish them and put them down and put yourself up. Those are your equals. Prabhupada tells a story that once there were four attorneys, four lawyers, barristers, and one of those lawyers was appointed to the Supreme Court judge. Very big post. Big post, big responsibility, and big salary. Big money. So when the three remaining lawyers were talking amongst themselves, they were saying, "Oh, did you hear? Sunil," their friend Sunil. "Sunil was just promoted to the Supreme Court judge." And then one of them said, "Oh, wow, really?" And then the other one, one of the attorneys who was envious, he was envious of his friend who got this big post. He said, "Yes, he got the post, but he probably gets no salary. He probably gets no money." So he couldn't accept, obviously he gets a big salary, but he's so envious. He became the Supreme Court judge, but he gets no money. He's doing it for free. So this is the idea that those that are equal with us, we simply find fault and criticize. And those that are below us, those new bhaktas or those new collectors or new brahmins or anyone who's below us, we simply exploit and lord it over and ridicule and criticize. You know, we just say, "Oh, you're worthless, you're stupid, you fool. You don't know anything, I'm a big devotee, you're just new. I've been here for so many years." So these are the material tendencies. So this devotee mentioned feeling superiority over others. But is that what is taught by Lord Chaitanya? He said, no, amani. You should have amani, no pride. You should go underneath the feet of others. You should be the grass that they walk on. So as a result of these things, then he started to find fault with the devotees. And when you find fault with the devotees, it doesn't matter even if you have the exalted post of Brahma. Brahma became offensive. He became offensive. He thought, it's not that Brahma could think, "Well, I'm Lord Brahma. I have a big post. I have a big responsibility in the mission of the Lord. I'm the creator of the universe." But he thought himself so big that he could offend the Brijvasis. He could offend them. So he stole the cowherd boys and stole the calves. It was a big apparat to the Brijvasis. Even if you're in Krishna's family, even if you're a direct family member of Krishna, you cannot offend the Vaishnavas without getting reaction. Just how superior a position Brahma is in. But yet as soon as he became proud and offended the Vaishnavas, he fell down. Vimohan. He lost his position. He became bewildered. And even if you're in Krishna's family, you're a direct family member of Krishna, but you think, "Oh, hey, I'm in the Krishna Gotra, Chutta Gotra, I'm Krishna's family member. I can do whatever I want. Just like in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, there's the story of Sambha. Sambha, his boyfriends dressed him up, they put some pillows and some big, made him look like a pregnant girl, pregnant lady, young woman. And then they went to the sages and rishis, the Narad Muni and other rishis, they said, hey rishi, look at Sambha, he's pregnant or she's pregnant. What kind of child will she give birth to? So they were ridiculing these young boys, members of Krishna's family, his descendants. They were ridiculing and making fun. They're actually they were being offensive to the rishis, making fun, joking with the rishis. So then, I can't remember which rishi, but one sage, he pointed to them and said, yes, Sambha will give birth to an iron club which will destroy your dynasty. So Krishna's own family became destroyed by Vaishnava Parada. The family of Krishna was completely annihilated by offenses to Vaishnava, by the club of Aparad. So what then, those pillows that made Sambha look like he was pregnant became the steel club, iron club of Aparad, which destroyed the whole dynasty of Krishna's own family. So this is what Aparad is like. When you offend the Vaishnavas, you create a steel club. You send out an Aparad, like a boomerang, you know, you throw out an aparad, you offend the Vaishnavas, you think you're a big devotee, and you lord it over others, and you offend them, and belittle them, and ridicule them. Then you send it out with your words, or with your thinking, and it comes back as a steel club, an iron club, and smashes you right on the head, and finishes you. Khatam ho gaya. One shot. Now, what about the family of Lord Chaitanya? Lord Chaitanya's family, Mother Sachi, Lord Chaitanya's own mother, became an offender, a Vaishnava offender. And when Lord Chaitanya was distributing prema bhakti and giving Krishna prema, he was giving it to everyone freely, but he didn't give it to his mother. And a devotee, Srivas Thakur and others, he said, Mahaprabhu, why aren't you giving Krishna prema to your mother? Mother Sachi, she's a Jagatmata. There's this beautiful verse Chaitanya Charitamrita is a Jagatmata. She's the mother of the whole universe. She's the Mahavatsalya, something. She's the greatly, she's the most affectionate woman in the universe. She's the mother of everyone, Sachi Mata. And you're not giving Krishna prema to her? Why is that? Lord Chaitanya said, she will never disrupt you to associate with Advaitacharya. And after associating with Advaitacharya, he took sannyas. And then Lord Chaitanya started associating with Advaitacharya, hearing Bhagavatam, performing kirtan. So then one day, Mother Sachi said, this Advaitacharya, he's not Advaita, he's Dvaita. Advaita means no duality. It means no, your outside and inside are the same. No deception, no hypocrisy. That's one meaning of Advaita. There's not, Advaita means not two, but one. You're one, you're outside person, you're inside. In other words, Saralata. Saralata means simplicity, straightforward, truthful. This is Vaishnava. His inside, his outside is the same. Clear, pure. So Mother Sachi said, he's not Advaita, he's Dvaita. He has two sides. He's acting like my friend. He's acting like a friend of the family, like a second father. But he stole my son. He stole my son. Now he's going to steal my second son. So this was her aparad. Not a very serious aparad. She just made a joke. Oh, he's not Advaita, he's Dvaita. Because he stole my son. Yeah, he was supposed to be my friend. My friend will support me. My friend will carry out my will and please me and satisfy me. That's my friend, but he's not my friend. He took away my son. Now he's going to take Lord Chaitanya. So when Nimai Pandit was associating with Advaita, she said, oh, he's going to see Advaita. He's not Advaita, he's Dvaita. So for that offense, Lord Chaitanya said she'll never get delivered. So then finally there was a kirtan performance, and Advaita was in ecstasy, and premavesh, and kirtan. Then somehow Mother Sachi took the dust from his feet, and then she was forgiven for the offense. So this shows that even if you're a direct member of Krishna's family, you're not free from the reaction to Vaishnava Parada. So this letter ends. This is his teaching to all of us. This godbrother says, let my misfortune Let my misfortune and the hellish suffering in my heart is going through, be a warning to all the nice devotees and friends of ISKCON. So he is realizing this. Now he's warning all of us. Please avoid arrogance, pride, and fault-finding. So these are the enemies to Vrijvasi spirit. These are the enemies to the Vaishnava spirit. And if we have these enemies within us, then we will never enter Vrindavan. We will never create Vrindavan within our minds, and our minds are carrying us. The mind is the vehicle, Manoratena. Rat, you have your Rat card. So Manoratena, on the chariot of the mind, you enter Vrindavan. And when your mind enters Vrindavan, then your next birth you enter Vrindavan. So the mind, the chariot of the mind, will never enter Vrindavan. Just as in Kurukshetra, the gopis wanted to take Krishna. You get on your chariot, come to Vrindavan. So the guru comes as a representative of Krishna, a representative of Nityananda and Radharani. He puts your mind on a chariot and he drives it, and he takes you to Vrindavan. But if you say, no, I don't want to put my mind on the chariot. I want to maintain pride and arrogance and superiority over others and fault-finding, then we'll never be able to go on the chariot of the mind and enter Vrindavan. So this is a very serious event that happened in Krishna consciousness. And this devotee, he wrote this letter, then he disappeared. No one knows where he is. Out of embarrassment and shame and humility and other feelings, he disappeared from the society of the Vaishnavas. No one knows where he is. But he left these very powerful instructions so we can examine ourselves. Let me ask myself, am I arrogant? Am I proud? Because arrogance and pride comes from ignorance. If one is thoughtful and realizes, what am I? I'm one soul. My Prabhupada used to use the analogy. If you want to understand the finitude of our reality, then you can use this small progression. This is one city, Bombay. This is one very tiny street in the city of Bombay where there's millions of streets. There's one little building and there's millions of buildings. And then this one city of Bombay is part of Maharashtra. And Maharashtra is so vast with so many cities. And Maharashtra is part of India. And India is one country and there's so many countries with millions of cities and millions of provinces and billions of people. But then that's part of the Earth planet, this country. But then this Earth planet is just one of millions of planets in this universe. And then this universe is just one of millions of universes. So how big are we? Oh, you're temple president for 16 years? Oh, wow, you're big. You're really big. You've been a head pujari for 19 years? Oh, you're really big. Oh, you're a sannyasi for, 20 years? Oh, you're really big. Well, big what? Big nothing. It's insignificant. A progressive devotee always reflects. He always thinks about how insignificant and tiny I am. Kamala jala jala jivana talamala. Kamala jala jala jivana talamala. Bhajahure mana shri nandanandana abhaya charanara vindare. Kamala jala 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 jivana talamala. What are we? We're a tiny bindu, a drop sitting on a leaf. This material body is like a waxy leaf of a lotus. Waxy, waxy covering. Like a little drop of rainwater. The leaf goes like that. Zhup. It falls off. So the soul is that drop of water. And this body and this material existence is that Padma Pato, that lotus leaf. Just one little, and it falls off. Just one little, boom, the soul is finished, out of the body. What is our power? What is our strength? What is our defense? What is our significance? What is our position? It is very, very small. This verse is supposed to be worn around our neck and meditate upon and realize. We must realize this verse. Until we realize this verse, we will never make progress towards pure Krishna consciousness. This verse must be realized. China Adhi Suni China Tilari Vasahishana Amani Damani Dina Kirtaniya Sadhari. Out of thousands of devotees, maybe one realizes this. And that one who realizes this, he can make progress in Krishna consciousness and attain the perfection of Krishna prema. Just on the basis of this one realization, Trinadapi Suni Chena. Amanina Amanidena Kirtaniya Sadhari. But because Maya is so thick, she's always pushing us into this idea of position, Kamani, Lo, Pratishtha. This is Kanak Kamani Pratishtha. Money, position, fame, enjoyable association. This is always Maya's pushing this into our mind. So we always have to push it out of our mind. No, what is my superiority? Oh, I'm a big this or a big that. But what am I? Krishna, whatever I am, it's from Krishna, from Guru. Whatever I have in my hand, it's due to Krishna's mercy, due to his blessings. When we were first trying to advance in Krishna consciousness, this tendency was always there, and we were always told that whenever you feel proud or you feel a sense of superiority over a new person or over an equal or over another person, you feel more superior, then you should stop. Don't try to compare yourself to your contemporaries. Don't lose your contemporaries as a basis of standard of comparison. You should compare yourself to your guru and to Krishna. They are the reservoir of quality and the reservoir of Krishna consciousness and purity. So when you start comparing yourself to guru or to Krishna, then you realize, oh, I am really nothing. I am really nothing. What are my qualities? What are the extent of my qualities? There are 28 qualities of a devotee listed in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. And Krishna has those in unlimited measure. What do I have? So as soon as we're a little thoughtful, don't make a comparison on this plane. This is a relative plane. Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. We want to go to the plane of pure bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti. So we should compare our level to the level of Shuddha Bhaktis. What are the qualities, the attributes, the behavior, the perception and the realization of the Shuddha Bhakti? Because that is our goal. We must become like that, pure devotees. We're not jockeying or trying to get position on the relative plane. Oh, now I'm temple commander. But maybe if I go on life membership, and then I can become life membership director. Then maybe vice president or whatever. Or sannyas or guru or whatever. GBC. We don't want positions on the relative plane. We only want one thing, pure love of Krishna. So we want to see the standard. Where is that standard of pure love of Krishna? Where is that pure devotee which I must emulate? Anusharan, we must follow in the footsteps of the pure devotees and become pure in some lifetime. That is the meaning of Krishna consciousness, to become a pure devotee of Krishna. So one of our soldiers has been stricken down in the battlefield. But before he left the battlefield, he gave us a very nice teaching. After 30 years of Krishna, practicing Krishna consciousness, this is his realization. Oh, my dear friends, my dear fellow soldiers, my dear ladies and gentlemen, please be careful. Don't develop feelings of superiority. Don't be proud and arrogant. And don't find fault with the devotees. Otherwise, you'll become like me. And he's in a bad position right now. So he wants to learn from others. So that's what not to do. But what to do is to follow the pure devotees. To be loving. To be affectionate. To have mutual respect for all devotees. To want to serve everyone. This is a selfless mood. Service. That is Vrindavan. That is Brijvasi spirit. Everything for the center. In the new Vrindavan community where they published this newspaper, Brijvasi spirit, the main principle that made that community successful was that the center of the community was the pleasure of Radha Vrindavan Chandra. They were the cynosure of everyone's eyes. Everyone, the center of the whole community was the pleasure of Radha Vrindavan Chandra, pleasure of Krishna. And this is the same as Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, the spiritual world, the center of Vrindavan is everyone is acting and speaking and singing and walking and moving and thinking and dreaming for the pleasure of Krishna, to bring happiness and satisfaction to Krishna. This is the spirit of Vrindavan. This is the Vaishnava spirit of the devotees of Radha and Krishna. But this spirit we have to develop in our association so we can make this Bombay a wonderful place. And let the Manipur kingdom also become a wonderful place. Our representatives are there, Prabhupada's disciples are there, and his grand disciples are working to make that a wonderful place. So let us make Bombay also a wonderful spiritual place like Vrindavan, by developing this Vaishnava spirit of selfless service, mutual respect, appreciation of others, and a humble mood and humble behavior. Dasosmi. Not that we approach someone, Prabhu, can you help me? No, that's not my department. There's no question of departmentalized service. In the spiritual world, when you attain Swarup Siddhi, you'll have a particular agya, particular order, or parakashta. You may receive a particular order, a particular seva, which you must become expert in. Chamara seva, bhajan, whatever. Mala, making mala. So you do that at a regular basis. You do a standard regular service. But at any moment, at any time, in the spiritual world, when you have your Swarup Siddhi, you must be prepared to do the needful. Prabhupada used this term, do the needful. You must be prepared to do whatever service. It's not that someone, some coward boy comes to you and says, oh, Prabhu, can you help me collect some of Krishna's cows that wandered around? No, no, that's not my department. My department is making garlands for Krishna. When he comes back from the coward pastures, I will give him some nice Juti Mala and some Bela Mala. That's not my department. Go find somebody else. Go to the Goshala department and find some coward boys to collect Krishna's cows. I'm sorry, but it's not my department. Don't have this type of departmentalized service. There's one department. There's only one department in the spiritual world that is pleasing Krishna, serving Krishna. There's no separate department. So you have your designated desire, eternal service to the Lord, and then any kind of service at any time that's requested and needed for the moment, and for the flow of the pleasure of the Lord, the flow of His transcendental pastimes, you may be called or asked. And you don't, no one says, well, no, I'm busy, I mean, I have to have an appointment, and I'm tired, or I'm hungry. There's no question of that. Service, when someone offers a service, what they're doing is opening the door to the spiritual world. When someone comes, just like you may be in a dark room or you're lost or you're confused and you want to get out of that room, someone opens the door and says, this way out. So when someone comes to offer, to ask for service, they're actually opening the door to the spiritual world. And they say, please, Prabhu, can you help me? Then they open the door. Yes. So if you accept that service, then you pass through that door and you enter the spiritual world. And if you accept every opportunity for service and render service as best you can, adjusting according to circumstance, then you'll actually enter the spiritual world of Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan is made of the selfless service mood. So we don't want anyone to leave Krishna consciousness or to give up the practice of bhakti. So one of our dear beloved devotees has left us temporarily, but he's left us also an important message. So let's not follow his bad example. Let's follow his teaching and give up this arrogance, give up this false pride, become humble and true servants of the Vaishnavas. And don't feel yourself superior. Who are you? What are you? In one second you can be eliminated. If one little bug, one little virus gets inside of you, it can kill you in 1 minute, 1 hour. One cobra bites you, you're finished in 10 minutes. What is your power? Always remember, we are a very tiny, tiny particle. There's a particle of consciousness. Somehow or other, we have the good fortune to render some service to Guru and Krishna. Always be grateful, and always remember how fortunate we are. And don't cast your fortune aside by false ego and misconception of your identity and the tendency to lord it over others. Trinadapi sunichena turarivasahishana amanina maninena kirtaniya sadhari. Memorizing the verse doesn't mean realization. We must practice it. We must feel it. We must genuinely feel, what am I? I'm not, you know, somehow I've been given a chance to do some service. How fortunate I am. Everyone is doing service. And Brahma, he thought, oh, I'm doing big service. But Krishna put him in good illusion to show him his service is not so big. No one's service is big or small. It's all absolutely equal. Be grateful if you have an opportunity to serve. And try to serve purely in the mood of Vrindavan. So what we're really addressing here is a particular mentality, a particular mood. Of course, we're all serving 24 hours a day in different departments, so there's not one second extra. But it's a matter of the real thing we want to develop is not just service, but seva bhava, the mood and attitude of service. Because at some time in our sojourn in this world, we may become incapacitated. We may become feeble or infirm. We may become diseased or not be able to run around or to do anything but just sit. But when we're young, and the reason we're serving actively with our senses and our body is so that our mind can become purified and our mind can develop this attitude of service. Bhava Grahi Janardhan. Bhava Grahi Janardhan. Krishna Janardhan is known as Bhava Grahi. He accepts the attitude, the mentality of seva, the mentality of service. So this we have to cultivate. That, Prabhu, I'm very busy with my service, but maybe tomorrow I'm free, I have some free time, maybe I can help you tomorrow. In other words, it's a mood. We have to develop this mood of service, the mood of the servant. Although we may not have any time at the moment someone comes and asks us for some service, we may not be able to fulfill their desire or to serve them. But we can deal with that such a situation in a very humble way, in a very obliging way, At another time, and we can say, maybe another time I can help, but just not now. It's not some, what we find more often is that we use the excuse, oh, I'm busy with my department, I can't help you. Because we don't really have the mood and the mentality of seva bhava, to serving everyone and serving others. Oh no, Prabhu, actually I'm very busy. Actually we're not that busy, but we're lazy. We're very lazy, that's true. We're very lazy, and instead of saying, yes, I'm very lazy and I don't want to serve you, which is a fact, we say, oh no, I have my department, I'm very busy. But the reality is that most devotees aren't that busy that they can't help a little bit here and there, time to time. But some devotees, no matter when you ask them, or how you ask them, or where you ask them, they'll say, oh no, I'm very busy, very, very busy. And then you come back an hour later, you see him in his office, you know, sleeping in his office with the air conditioning on, he's so busy. So this isn't exactly sarlata, you know, straightforward. I have to adjust, no doubt, but what we have to develop is, well, because when we develop the mood of service, then that destroys these anarthas. This one verse, if we realize that I'm a servant, and that a humble servant of the Vaishnava, is then the superiority complex, that I'm superior over others, arrogance and pride will all be removed from the mind. But the most serious offense is Vaishnava Parada. When, if you want to analyze, why am I not making advancement in Krishna consciousness? I've been chanting for so long, or serving for so long, 1 year, 5 years, 2 years, why am I not actually experiencing what Krishna consciousness is all about? And the primary problem is one and one only, Vaishnava Parada. This is told by all the followers of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and it's told by all the acharyas and all the scriptures. The Vaishnava Parada is the number one impediment to advancement of Krishna consciousness. Familiarity breeds contempt. We live amongst each other, we eat together, we sleep together, we serve together, we become contemptuous. We become familiar, this one, that one. We become loose in the mind, loose in our thinking, and we become loose in our speaking, and loose in our acting. So you want to have a tight thinking. How do you keep tight thinking? Concentrated thinking, proper thinking. By always tightly hearing the scriptures, tightly reading the books. Because the more you drink philosophy through your ears, the more your mind becomes tight and develop the spiritual power to control your mind. And then you don't speak loosely or act loosely. And you become pure also. Transcendental knowledge is the greatest purifier, along with the chanting of the holy name. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.